Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very 241st episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, a podcast about board games, board games, board games, board games, board games, and board games, and board games. And I'm joined today by Emily.
Oh, my gosh. Hello, it's me, Emily. Hello.
I said a lot of board games there.
Yeah, your last podcast episodes have been chock full of board games, and then this one we're doing a piddly little serving,
and you're
really amplifying it.
A feeble offering for the end of the year. Like, this is the last podcast of the year.
Incorrect!
You know, Happy New Year, everybody, if you're listening to this.
Happy New Year!
If you're playing this podcast at your New Year's do, out loud to a room full of your friends and family and close acquaintances or enemies.
And happy birthday if it's your birthday.
Happy birthday if it's your birthday.
Yeah. And I'm just happy that Tom's finally on the podcast. It's been so long.
I don't know. It's been a while, right?
I love the podcast with Tom. What Tom, please?
Every week you're waiting for a Tom cast. And just where is he?
Where is he? I never see him on Shut Up and Sit Down anymore.
It seems like these days you can't have a podcast without Emily. Give us more Tom.
Exactly.
That's what the people are saying at home. What games are we going to talk about on this podcast, Emily?
Oh, have you forgotten? I thought you were a professional.
Okay.
This is why they don't invite you on the podcast. Forest Shuffle? We're doing Forest Shuffle. It's a game about Tom.
What is it really? It's a game about tucking cards under other cards and making a nice forest. That's what it is, right?
Yeah. And we're talking about Apiary, which is about bees in space.
And also on this podcast, we're going to talk about Misfits, a game that I neglected to mention in the intro for the pod because we decided we were going to talk about it about halfway through. It's good. Find out more about that one at the end. You came up with the perfect name for this podcast before we even started. Bees and Trees. It's the Bees and Trees cast.
And it's so good. You're going to love it.
So good. You're going to love it. What? We've got such treats in store for you after this commercial break. There's no commercial break. I'm just going to put the sting in there. But I really like the phrase, after this commercial break. Like, I want to use that in
I can
more.
Sell them some stuff.
Yeah, we could.
Some stuff I can sell.
What could you sell them?
I am starting an OnlyFans.
First up on this podcast, we're going to talk about Forest Shuffle. This is a game published by Lookout Games and designed by the mysteriously single-named Kosh. Just one word. Very mysterious, very interesting.
I'm intrigued.
So am I. Come with me into the forest and you will find trees and foxes and birds, for this is a game of being in nature. This is actually one of the first games from Lookout Games' Green Line, which means that this is like a super recyclable version of this game. I think it's got that cardstock that you can basically just throw into the ground and it'll disappear. Nice cardboard box, no plastic wrap. It's one of those, which I think is nice and apt for a game about building a little forest in front of you. This game is a super simple card game where you are going to be building out a little forest in front of you. It's a kind of tableau building, card drafting little box. What you have in front of you when you start the game is this big sort of long board that sits in the middle of the table that's called the clearing. And cards are going to get placed into the clearing over the course of the game, but mostly you're going to be playing cards from your hand into a little space in front of you, your own personal forest. You'll start by playing trees in front of you, which will have some kind of scoring conditions on them, and they're going to cost you cards from your hand to play. So if I wanted to play a sycamore tree, I'll have to bin two other cards from my hand to play it. And I'll then put those cards into the clearing in front of everyone, and players can then draw those cards. Because the two actions you can take in this game are play a card or draw two cards. And that's literally it, I think. I think there are only two options for the whole game. You're going to be drawing cards and playing cards until the game end is triggered, which happens in, again, a very pleasingly simple way. You go through this big deck of cards, and as they get whittled down, these winter cards are going to get drawn from the deck. First winter card, nothing happens, but winter's on the way. Second winter card, winter's knocking on your door. It's checking your post. It's trying to get in through your window to check if you've got a TV license. And then the third winter card, that's winter. It's happened. The game ends as soon as it's drawn. That's the end. No more points. But you might have heard me use the word points there. Let me tell you how points are scored in this game, because that's the whole deal. This is one of those big score attack games. Just try and get your points as high as you possibly can. You're going to do this by planting trees, which are going to give you little point scoring criteria on them, but also all the wildlife that you're going to be playing is going to score differently depending on what kind of wildlife it is. So, for example, like fireflies, just score for the more of them that you have. I think that like rabbits or hares score for in a similar way. You just have to stack them on top of each other. Deer's score multiplied by certain symbols that you'll find on tops of cards. It's one of those classic point salad-y, choose specific areas you're going to go into and then just jam out as many points as you can. But there's one final weird twist of this game, which is that the cards are sort of split down the middle. So the tree cards, they're full bleed art, they're just a big tree on a card. But all the wildlife is split either horizontally or vertically. And you will then have to tuck those cards underneath the trees, with each tree only being able to tuck one card on each side for most of them. And so this is an interesting little mechanic that's in this game of... not only are you working out which cards you're going to bin to pay for other cards, but you're working out which sides of cards you're going to focus on and where you're going to plant them in your forest. There's a nice sort of diverse level of strategy because there's lots of different kinds of cards in the deck and it shows you how many of them there are. And it's kind of got this edge of trying to take cards away from people at the right moment. Matt and Pip, who I played it with, favorably compared this to Arboretum, which I thought was interesting. Anyway, that's about as short a sort of explanation as I can give for Forest Shuffle. It's a big combo kind of game that had me thinking about other similar bigger boxes like Ark Nova or Terraforming Mars or other similar things, but in a much, much, much smaller box. Emily.
Yes.
I think you told me that you didn't like this game that much.
First of all, what on earth is a TV license? And do I have to have one of those? What are you talking about?
You don't live in the United
Kingdom. Is winter going to get me?
Winter's going to get you.
No, I don't.
In the UK, you need a TV license to have a television.
Wow, that's disgusting. So I played this game on Board Game Arena exclusively. I've never seen the physical version. I don't have the cards that you can just throw in the ground.
No, your cards exist only in the digital space.
Yeah, the most recyclable space of all. I think now you've got to help me out here.
Okay.
I think the problem that I had with it, and I saw that you tweeted the final score of at least one of your games.
Yes.
And Matt had so much higher score than either you or Pip. And I'm curious if the same thing happened to you that happened to me. Was he like gunning for those deer?
Yes.
And I can't remember what it goes with. Yeah.
I think it's like deer and wolves is the combo.
Because afterwards, like, somebody had done that and I was like, what is this? How did they demolish me so much? And I looked it up like online to see if anyone was talking about it. And there was a forum about it and they were saying, yeah, just don't let people get the deer. You should know this. Just don't let them get the deer. And I was like, I think the problem that I had with it that I probably wouldn't have with a physical version is when it's on BGA, like, I can't preemptively look at what cards there are and like what they do. Like, sure. There's no way for me to really know. The deer are immensely powerful. Like, it's already hard enough, you know, reading. There's so much text on these cards and they're double-sided.
Yeah,
and
there's a lot,
like,
to read.
It was so much information. Yeah. And I feel like it would just benefit from being able to look through before I start the game, which I couldn't do.
I think that makes a lot of sense. But even then, I think that, like, those kinds of combos might not kind of leap out at you when you're just looking through the deck and will only come out in the play of it. Like, I don't think...
Yeah, sure.
I definitely couldn't have looked through the whole deck of Forest Shuffle and been like, well, these cards are really strong. And I think there's been a lot of conversation about this, like, around this game, of people thinking that it's, like, a bit unbalanced, especially in the realm of the wolves and the deer. To clarify, the scores at the end of that game, where I thought I'd played a blinder in that game, like, almost all my cards were put in work. And our scores were...
Exactly.
Pip on 86, me on 144, and Matt on 289. Like, that is just over double my score.
It's incredible.
He got almost all of those points. 247 of them came from his wolves and deer combo. And yeah, like, I agree, that just came out of nowhere and did leave a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth. But I will say that I think that the thing it needs, more than anything, is like a note in the rule book being like, hey, if this game is going to have that combo be that strong, it needs to have a little thing that's like, hey, look out for this. This is going to really mess
exactly.
you up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, have a little colored border on the deer or something. Be like, look,
warning.
This thing's crazy. Yeah.
If used in the wrong hands, this will be nuclear.
Yeah, it just feels like a game that, I mean, with any game, but especially this one, where experience is just going to make you so much better at it just for knowing the game, not necessarily like having like developed a better strategy or anything, but just like knowing the layout of what cards will interact with each other and everything like that. Like,
what can score you that many points?
Yeah, if you've played it like three times, playing it against someone who's their first time is like completely unfair. Like, it feels like that sort of thing.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. But I do think there is a really nice, like, on that topic, like, we did not prevent Matt from getting these deer because we didn't know. But in subsequent games that we played, we had some really nice, like, blocking and kind of very deliberate manipulation of that market in the middle to try and keep cards out of the way. There's a rule where if you ever have 10 or more cards in the middle, it just wipes, getting rid of everything in there. And there was a thing that a lot of people were doing, which I guess is where this Arboretum comparison comes from, of discarding a card into that like public market, like paying for something with a card and putting it into the market, and then very quickly trying to snaffle it back up because they actually did want that card and they assumed that no one else was going to pinch it. But then spotting people doing that and trying to clear that market was very, very satisfying. And there's definitely something in there of this game having a lot of the like juicy combos and iconography build up that bigger boxes have, but in a much, much, much smaller package. It is like Combo City every single turn, made as simple as you can possibly make it, I think.
I mean, I completely agree. I just couldn't get past that sour taste in my mouth from it. But that is what drew me to it. Like, that is, yeah, all of that comboing and everything. It has so much potential, I'm sure, is there if you do play it enough. But I haven't, Tom. I haven't.
You haven't.
This is on you.
I also think, yeah, like playing it on Board Game Arena, like, I think that a game like this is going to look like a game that's so much, and when it is just a deck of cards, the pleasure of manipulating those cards and like slotting them underneath each other, I guess, is kind of lost on Board Game Arena potentially. Yeah, I can see that. But I can also see it being a game that like fundamentally is like, if you are not a fan of these sort of like big point juicer style games, this is not going to win you over. But if you are, there's definitely something to like here in that you can put it in your bag, play it at the pub. It's pretty quick. It's one of those. It's nice. I liked it.
Yeah, I'm very happy for you, Tom. I'm pleased.
You're pleased. You are.
It's really nice to hear you like a game.
Yeah, that's good. What about?
It's just nice to hear you on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been so long. Next up on the podcast, we're going to talk about Apiary. This is a game designed by Connie Vogelman with art by Quanshai Moria, and it's published by Stonemaier Games, in which you and your friends, 1 to 5 of you and your friends, are going to be bees in space. I really like the theme for this game. It's fun. It's just a worker placement game, but the bees are really good.
And they are really in space. And you've all got your own little faction of what bees you've got.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got your own little hive. You've got your own little hex mat, which has a little hive on it. And it's great. And you're trying to develop this hive, Tom. You're trying to develop it and also advance in science.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's how you win. That's how you get victory points. Did you realize that? That's
crazy. By the way, advancing in science? That's what the bees are after? Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You're trying to develop and you're trying to advance in science.
Okay, I just like the way that you've said advance in science, like it's a cool, normal phrase.
I have a lot of scientist friends. They constantly are saying, at work today, I was advancing in science.
I was doing my best to advance in science, more broadly.
I was adding all sorts of hexes to my map.
and I was generating lots of honey.
So what you'll be doing is you have these worker bees in your control, I guess, and you'll be putting them out onto the main board to do all of these actions. There are, how many are there? There are six
actions.
There's
loads.
There are six.
I counted them
just now.
I'm counting them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I can confirm there are six actions.
Wait, actually, now that you've done it, I need to do it again because I don't trust you.
That's very understandable.
Six actions.
Can we confirm there's six?
Oh, yes, there's six. There's the explore action where you're going to have this little miniature of it's called, I think it's called the queen ship. The queen ship, I think. And it is so unnecessarily like bulbous and cute.
It's
like,
delightful.
You did not need it for all it does, though. You're just moving it around on this map and exploring planets, getting resources. That's basically what you're doing. Then there's the advance action, where you can add these farms or recruit bees or development tiles to your hive. They're little hex tiles. You'll put them on your mat. Then there's the grow action, where you can gain new workers or gain a frame, which is like adding to your hive. You'll add these four extra hexes to your hive so that you can add more stuff to it. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. Aren't bees clever?
Then there's the research action where there are these cards. They're called seed cards.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all these different little things that you can do. If you use them on your turn, you get a little benefit. Or you can discard them for a resource, or you can plant them, and planting them gets you more points at the end. It's so cool. Then there's the convert action, where you can convert your little resources or your cards into other resources or cards. Or you can choreograph a little dance. Abby Lee Miller, more like Abby B. Miller, am I right, Tom?
Is that a dance mum's joke?
Am I right? That's a dance mum's joke.
Yes!
That is for none of our audience.
That is for exactly three members of our audience, which are my three younger sisters who are obsessed with dance mums and sometimes listen to the podcast.
Do they listen to the podcast?
Very occasionally, they will listen to an episode.
Sweet.
Yeah, mostly for
pity,
I think.
No one in my family has listened to it.
Aww.
No one in my family. They've watched my videos, but they haven't listened.
They don't want to commit you to audio form.
Yeah, they hate my voice. Yeah, it runs in the family. The dances are essentially just different ways of converting that you can kind of manipulate yourself. So if you are the one teaching the dance, you can add these little dance tiles to it, which like dictate what you're converting and what it converts to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So yeah. It's like, if you're first to do the dance, you can be like, this is a dance where you turn points into water. And then there's like a thing which is like, doesn't everyone after that, when they use that dance, you get a little Benny as well, I think.
Yeah, you get a little queen's favor, I'm pretty sure.
If you're the dance mum, then all your dance kids get you points.
Isn't that the way?
It's just
that's
like
what
the show.
They're there for.
It's just like the show.
Bring me the money.
Bring me the honey?
Bring me the honey. Oh, that's so good. Or you can carve, which is essentially just spending honey to get these really powerful hex tokens, which will let you get bonus points at the end of the game, like a huge amount of bonus points. This is essentially how you win.
Yeah, I think those are like basically the biggest way you're going to get like end game points, is from those big chunky golden tiles, because that action is also quite hard to do because of this game's cool system. So sort of the big twist of Apiary is that your workers are going to sort of like gain experience as you use them. So when you place a worker onto the board, your first ones will probably be like a level 1 bee. And then when that worker gets bumped off of the board, it'll turn into a level 2 bee, because this is a worker placement game where the spaces, you will occupy a space when you're in it, but you just get bumped off by someone else turning up. It's not like a blocky worker placement game necessarily. So when your bee gets bumped, it'll go up a level. And all of the spaces have a special ability for if you use a level 4 bee on them, except for Carve, which you have to have a level 4 bee for. So the other things give you a benefit. Carve, going there is the benefit in and of itself, which is kind of showing you how powerful that action is. But once you bump a level 4 bee, they then have to hibernate, which means you get rid of the worker and you put one of these little tokens down in the hibernation area at the bottom of the board, which gives you a little bonus and is also a little end game area control thing. We won't get into that. But it adds this really interesting sort of like tempo and flow to the game, where you're trying to position certain workers in certain spots, hoping they'll get bumped, hoping so that you can then do a more powerful action with them later on. It has this lovely flow of like your forces, your sort of workers, gradually building and then declining in strength. This very like natural ebb and flow, where you're managing both the resources you have in front of you and the workers themselves are also a resource. And that's combined with what is this kind of very pleasant base building aspect. These little hexagon tiles that you're building out on your own personal board, this sort of honeycomb pattern that you're gradually extending in front of you. Very pleasing and very satisfying to like sort of watch grow throughout the course of the game. Lots of like really pleasing interactions that are going on in this one. And it's also like very friendly as well. Like the worker bumping rather than exclusivity of the spaces makes it a very generous game. I found myself really enjoying this game. Like I was really pleasantly surprised by it because I didn't expect that much of it. That might be a little bit harsh, but like I expected it to be like good, not great. But I think that the simplicity of it and the ease of it is actually like something that I'm really keen to sit down to again. Like really nice little combos, really like sort of gentle interaction with other players. Like, yeah, I really liked it. Did you have a good time with it as well?
Yeah, I had a really good time. And I think I completely agree with that, because something that I really like about it is the fact that, you know, you're not getting blocked out of any spaces. You're not like having to really rework your strategy. It's, you can come up with something and it might like get a little bit messed up if people go for what you're going for, steal a farm that you're wanting or whatever else. Like that's about the extent of how hard it can get, like how mean it can get. But basically you can plan out your little hive and you can make that happen. And that's lovely. What a lovely feeling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do know what you mean. I think it's like...
It's just nice to actually have a Euro game where it's like, I can just basically do what I want to do.
Yeah.
I can come up with a plan. And there are so many different plans you can come up with, because like one game, I wanted to just build out my hive and just have all of these, like work my way to all these carving spaces so I get all these points. And that's like the main route. That's like what calls out to you the first time you play.
Yeah,
it's like, that seems like the best option. But then like on future games, I was like, maybe I want to manipulate this queen's favorite track. That seems pretty good. And so I was deliberately like, there's this queen's favorite track that you can advance up and you'll get points at the end of the game, depending on how far you've advanced up it. And there are different ways of advancing up it, including like discarding resources that you have too much of that you can't fit on your board.
Yes.
And so I was like deliberately manipulating my spaces on my board to be like, oh no, I can't fit any more fiber on here. Oh, but I'm getting all this fiber. Isn't that so sad? And at the end of my turn, I discard it. And then I just race up this track.
Oh, cool.
And then at the end of the game, I just got this bunch of points. I thought that was cool.
That is cool.
Fun that I can do silly things like that.
That reminded me of like, I really do like that aspect of the game where your resources aren't just like dumped into a big pile next to your board, but they have to be physically stored on tiles in your hive. And like the kinds of tiles you're adding to your hive already give it like a little bit of a sense of like place and personality, but especially like having your resources physically like located on this little board in front of you does make it feel like a space that you're building up. Like we recently did this top 100 episode where we talked about Agricola. And I think that's something that like some of these Euro games, some of these worker placement games have kind of lost, this sense of like actually building something over the course of a game that isn't just a big, you know, number on a score sheet. It's like a thing you look at and you go, this is cool, I made this nice thing. And I think Apiary does that really, really nicely.
Yeah, I think it does that in a lot of different ways. Like I love how the resources, they're like these beautiful little chunky pieces.
Mm.
But then there are the basic resources, but then there are the special resources, and they're this gorgeous little glittery golden and bronze, like the wax is bronze and the honey's all gold. It's gorgeous, and it makes you feel like really special when you're getting these pieces, which are like better for you. You know what I mean?
I absolutely know what you mean. They're like quite hard to come by, and so when you place them,
yeah,
it's like, oh!
It does so much to make you feel like you're really like doing something special when you do something special, and I like that.
I think that's something like to do with, I think that like this publisher, Stonemaier Games, will often like their games get accused of being like sort of overly clean, overly generous, very like pleasing, but not exceptional in a lot of ways. And I think that that's often like not seeing the wood for the trees, in the sense that Wingspan is a really like beloved Stonemaier game that's like in so many people's homes. Like so many people got into the hobby through Wingspan. Like they love the birds, they love the presentation, they love how pleasing it is to play. But also that game has a bit of a bear of a manual and can get a little confusing for people's like first game. I found Apiary like really pleasant in that department in particular. Like I could see like my family playing this game that is quite a complicated Euro game, but the little cheat that it comes with that like tells you how to teach the game, like really clear player references, a really beautifully laid out board that's not too busy. Like, yeah, I just think it's a really good package for people who are like looking to find something a little more strategic than what they're used to, but that's still ultimately, you know, quite simple and enjoyable.
Yeah, and I don't think you would necessarily get that from looking at it. Like, if you're just looking at a photo of it or looking at the back of the box while you're at the game store or whatever, I think you would think, this is unapproachable. This doesn't seem like... like, because the board is beautiful, but it is, like, a little busy and a little, like, I don't know.
It's got a lot of iconography on it that's quite scary.
Yeah, but it's all necessary.
Right, yeah, necessary and also, like, as simple as it can be.
Yeah, exactly. And it works well. And I haven't had as much trouble as I have with a lot of Euro games in teaching it to people. You know what I mean? Like they get what everything does. They're all basically like all of the actions are nicely compact in their little areas and it's simple to follow. Yeah, it's good. It's good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, lovely. I'm glad that you also had a good time with this game. Like, we played this right at the end of our sort of PAX Unplugged experience, and it was very, like, cozy and generous and kind to sit down to at the end of playing lots of quite nasty games.
How did you find the length of it?
Just about right. Like, in the sense that little hibernation track at the bottom, like, filled up at exactly the right moment for me to feel like I'd done enough of the things I wanted to do, but could still have squeaked out just a couple more points here and there if I was really crunching. But it ended at this very, like, you know, fortunate sort of, like, perfect time, which I think I was the one to end the game as well, which is always very exciting when you're the last one to park one of your bees at the bottom.
Yeah, because I've had such different experiences with it. Like,
oh, interesting.
The first time I played, it seemed like it went... Yeah, exactly like that. It was like, oh yeah, that was perfect. That felt like the right amount of time. Everyone got what they needed to do, basically. But there was another time where I was just playing with people who, for some reason, got it in their mind that hibernating, awful. What an awful thing to do. I don't want any of my bees to hibernate. And so they were just like doing everything they could to keep those four bees from being bumped and from getting up. And so it's like, what is that? Like, we were just not progressing up the hibernation track.
Oh,
so
wow.
I was like, okay, I'm going to do that, I guess. So I was just flippantly throwing my bees in there, but they were like prolonging it. And I think that's so interesting because I don't think there's any benefit to it unless you're like really far behind and you're just like, well, I need more time.
Mm.
But they were doing it from the start. So I just I just thought that was interesting. Very funny.
I definitely think that seems bad. Yeah, that fear of like losing a worker is definitely like prevalent at the start, because you're like, you know, normally in worker placement games, like, it's, and we talked about Agricola earlier, it's like Agricola is a game about gradually increasing your worker pool. To have them so rudely taken away from you does feel like initially counterintuitive, but then you realize it's, you know, very well balanced for those like big, you know, those big spaces requiring those big workers to sort of like give you one last punch before they go out for good. My headcanon was that they're dead. I said they were dead workers, you said they were hibernating, but for
that's literally everything in the game says hibernating.
But like,
something made you think they was hibernating, but I'm pretty sure they're dead.
They were there and then they're not there anymore. Sounds like they've gone to the big green field.
But they are there.
The bees living.
They are there though.
They're not on your player board anymore.
They could become little cardboard tokens.
They look really dead, those cardboard tokens.
They do look dead.
They look like tiny bee sarcophagus.
They look like, you know how you find like cicada husks? Do you find those? I don't know if you have those.
Oh yeah, no, I find those on the reg. No, I know what they are through cultural osmosis, but in the UK, like bog, toad husk in the swamps and the moors, you know?
Toad husks?
Like eel husk, something like that. You know, that's probably what we have in the UK. Not that I've seen, you know.
Wow.
Whoa, mystery spicy bonus third game on the podcast. We said that it was going to be a two-game pod for a while, and then I remembered that I actually really wanted to talk about this third game because it's good, and I think you'll like it.
And it doesn't rhyme with bees or trees.
It's made of trees.
It makes it a bit of a, Tom?
A misfit.
There we go.
I got it. I was spending so long trying to find out some kind of bee-related joke that I missed the name of the game. Okay, Misfits is very, very, very simple as a game. I will preface this by saying this isn't particularly widely available at the moment. I think we've got quite an early copy of this game, but it will be available in the UK, etc., soon-ish is sort of the timeline that I was given on it. So Misfits' full title is Misfits the Tactical Stacking Game. And essentially, this is a game where you are sticking a load of wooden blocks on top of each other to make a big topsy-turvy teetering tower. But all of these wooden blocks are of super weird sizes and shapes. You've got some standard, like, big chunky wooden triangles and little squares, but you've also got, like, donuts and weird cylinders and this massive main piece that's, like, I don't even know how to describe it. It sort of looks like a face that's got its jaw removed. Like, there's loads of odd pieces that you're going to be stacking into this tower in a way that's kind of reminiscent of something like junk art is maybe the closest comparison. So on your turn, you are going to add one of the blocks that's in front of you into the tower, and if at any point you make blocks fall off the tower, you add those blocks into your collection. First player to get rid of all of their blocks is the winner, and you will constantly be building and rebuilding towers as they get knocked down. that's like the whole game. And it's very, very simple. It's very immediate. It's got all the pleasures of any kind of dexterity block stacking game that you know and love. But I just want to talk about Misfits for one very specific thing, which is that, like, I really enjoy that this game has you making little pieces of art on your table over and over again. Like, the pieces of wood they've selected for this game make this sort of, like, act of building this thing almost like a work of, like, collaborative sculpture. And rarely have I looked at a game, like a stacking game like this, and sat and looked at what we've built and been like, this is a really, like, aesthetically pleasing object. Do you know what I mean? Like, often you make things that are annoying and obtuse for people to do, but they're never, like, pretty. They're just functional. But in this game, like, you're making things that are really, like, interesting to look at. It sounds ridiculous, but I just think this has something that other games don't, in the sense that you are always making, like, very pleasing objects over and over again. And when they fall down, it's not like a big, I mean, it is a big, oh no, moment, but it's also, like, a chance to make something else that just looks cool. I don't know. There's some little magic to this, I certainly think.
No, I completely understand. I've never played this game, never seen this game in my life, but I've just looked it up. I'm on the website, and yeah, it looks gorgeous the way that people have made these. And, like, how is that standing? Did you make structures where you were like, how is that standing?
Yeah, like, especially when, like, if
these
you're playing
are insane.
If you're playing it in a super mean way, you'll be doing things like putting rounded pieces on straight pieces, and then someone puts another rounded piece on a rounded piece, and you're like, how is this happening? That is a constant feeling in this game. And I think that it there's something special about it being something where what starts as quite a game of people trying to place deliberately mean blocks in deliberately mean ways to try and throw off their opponents very quickly becomes something where people are just pleased at the act of making something together. And it's this interesting line, you know, between, like, dexterity game and, like, art object, or just, like, you know, creative play. I don't know. I had a whole jumble of thoughts while playing this game that was amazing, considering it is just, like, one big bit of wood that's been cut up to some small pieces.
Yeah, I that piece that you were struggling to describe earlier, where you were like, the jawless face, they have a little, it's so funny, they have, like, a little roster thing on the website.
Oh, wow.
And it's called The Ghost, and underneath every piece, they've got, like, a little, like, stats, like it's some sort of video game or something, and it's got, like, the weight is at 50%, difficulty, ooh, it's like 80%, stackability, that's a 20%er. The ghost is a little rough to use.
Oh my goodness.
But I assume you get some sort of benefit from it. I have no clue.
None. That's the thing.
What's the benefit? What's the benefit?
There's no benefit. You pick that piece because you want to place it, because it's weird. Like, okay. I think that's what's charming about it. Like, there is this game prides itself in having, like, zero rules. And I think that means that you can kind of play with it in ways that are a little more creative than just the bounds of, like, a standard game. Really delighted by this. It's available for, like, pre-order at the moment. I think it's really sweet. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. We will be back next year. That's right. This is, like, the last podcast of the year. Or if I don't do my job properly, which I'm liable to do, this might be the first podcast of the new year. If it's that, just ignore. Happy New Year. Yeah, Happy New Year. Exactly. Welcome to 2024. I hope that everything is fine. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll see you very soon. Have a lovely weekend. That's it.
Thank you for being on the pod, Tom.
Thank you. I know. Sorry. It's very last minute that I could make it, but
thank you.
You know, it's always good to always good to stop on by. Who knows what you'll see me next. Bye.
So glad to see you.